When was the last time you did that with each other? Something like that. You don't have to answer that, but it's something to think about. Do you remember when you were dating, how many questions you asked and how curious you were about each other? You know, you asked questions like the 36 questions. And there was never enough time for that. And then we get married, and the curiosity seems to just, like, go away. Well, we live together. Why do we have to ask questions? We know everything. Really? That's part of what contributes to the disconnection that grows for, I think, every couple. That we start looking like we're not that interested. Sue Johns is exactly right. We're not that tuned in. An awful lot of logistical stuff happens. And then you start having kids. I mean, that's before you have kids. Then you have the kids. Who has time? But it's more attitude, and it becomes deadly when we really are in those situations where we're disagreeing about things. So I'm working with two couples right now that I think they're the toughest, most difficult situations I've worked with ever. And I'm right at the limits of my ability. Yeah, I'm just right there, and struggling and praying and thinking and every week. The one couple, they're both counselors, toughest clients you can have. And the other couple, he's a pastor. And the pastor and his wife are just really in a really hard situation, It's pretty scary. Some things happened a few years ago that were hurtful. She didn't feel heard. Didn't feel like he was paying attention at all. He was going through a difficult situation in his church, which ended up with him leaving. And they moved from a location which had been like the best location for her, and job-wise and family-wise and all kinds of things that they'd ever had in their many years of marriage. And it was sort of a combination of she didn't feel like she understood something of the difficulty he was in, the hard position, and she didn't feel like she could really dump more on him, but also at the same time felt like, so she doesn't say much, but she also feels like it wouldn't matter if I did. He's not really paying attention. And so, you know, they've moved on with life and are now in our city and St. Louis, and It's just really hard. They're just really having a hard, hard time. They're very, very disconnected. So recently, someone invited them to a special, like, marriage activity that they had gone to last year for this next weekend, a group of people. And she was all excited about it. She asked him about it, and his first response had to do with how uncomfortable he was with a couple of the people that were there. That was going to be hard. That really, really hurt her. But they couldn't talk about that. They just argued. And they brought it into my office, and we talked about it some, and it really wasn't, they're arguing about, you know, the tip of the iceberg. Are we going or not? And then she'd argue some, and he'd argue some about, you know, their positions, trying to clarify, basically. But never really addressing the hurt. They're both hurt, actually. But never really addressing the hurt. But after some conversation, he got to a point and he actually said, I'm looking forward to going now. He said a couple other things. I mean, he was worried about a couple of things. And it actually, her response to it was, no, we're not going. How confusing is that? You know, and I'm sitting over here, it's like, I thought that's what was needed, and I don't know what else to do. But underneath it, is this huge doubt that she has, that she counts with him. And she said, this is really important to me. I really hope we can do this. And he said, oh, there are people there make me not want to go. What he felt in his reservation was more important. And she hasn't recovered from that. She hasn't recovered from that. So he recants, repents a little bit, and she's like, no way. No way. I don't believe you. I don't trust you. Now, it's gotten much worse than that because she's called him names that you would just think pastors' wives would not do that, using the F word and calling him a loser, a few things like that. That's what disconnection does. When you get more disconnected with in the argument, you reach for the biggest weapons. And they're weapons to hurt because you're fighting for your life. And the challenge becomes that if you flip the page, I think it's 66, 67, something like that, is we fall into a pattern. And really tonight what I want you to think about is, what's our pattern? What's the kind of way that we dance together? This isn't about finding out who's at fault. You know, either say neither one of you or both of you. And just settle it at that. It doesn't do any good. It's a relationship. And you just can't do it alone. And one person messing up really isn't, it's both of you dancing. Because if you think about dance and music, the music are the emotions that you're experiencing, many of which you're not aware of. That's driving you into behaviors. So it's not that you did the wrong behaviors, that you're not listening to the music and changing the music. And the music, the emotions, the connection, that's the place that we need to focus on. And then that's what we're missing, most of us in our marriage. So Sue Johnson here has three basic patterns. She makes up names. I don't like the names particularly. I think there are probably only really two here, but... Anyway, let's look at them. The first one, find the bad guy. Is the dead end pattern of mutual blame that effectively keeps a couple miles apart, blocking re-engagement and the creation of a safe haven. They dance at arm's length. There has not been an exception yet in this over 20 years of marriage counseling. When couples come in, they both want me to get on their side and tell the spouse it's their problem. You know, I literally feel the pull. And usually one of them is better at the pull than the other. But they're convinced this is the way to go. It's what they've been doing, and they come in, and they just want me to get in the game too. You ever look for a marriage counselor, ask he or she, you know, what do they do to prevent that? And if they don't know what you're talking about, go find somebody else. Find the bad guy. Number two, over on the next page. Marriage research labeled the next dance, demand, withdraw, or criticize, defend. And the third one. Third dance is freeze and flee. I see very little of that. Withdraw, withdraw. Now, what I do see is, if you were to map out your pattern, most likely there's one of you whose first step is to withdraw and the other whose first step is to attack or criticize or something like that. More go after you kind of thing, run away from you kind of thing. There's usually one of both in most relationships. But it's not uncommon to move into this third one that they mention, where somebody gives up after a while, and so they just withdraw. And now you just get, you know, you ever have some hours or days where nobody's talking? That's what that is. it's helpful to think about what is our pattern, but to think about it with some depth. So if you flip the page, Appendix D1, this is something you can do in another, later tonight or tomorrow morning or something. I'm just going to read through these so you can think about it. There's another one on the other side. When my partner and I are not getting along, I often react by. Describe your behaviors. Maybe it's helpful to think of a small disagreement. Not that one that you keep, that you can't solve, but something to think of a recent thing where you had this disagreement. That it's not a big thing, but it was aggravating. And think about, when we got into that, how did I react? What's that look like? My partner often reacts to me. Describe his or her behavior. When my partner reacts this way, I often feel. Now, this can be hard for us to think it even makes any difference because we live in this culture that says you are who you are because of what you think. Thinking's the name of the game. And that's dumb. And that's not what the Bible says. God talks about the heart of the person, and what happens in the heart is thinking. We don't think like that. Feeling, choosing, acting, the words we speak, and the list goes on and on. It's the seat of personality, and it's a whole thing. We've broken things out into like a scientific method, and we study all the pieces, but we never put it back together. And the human person functions as a whole thing. And so I'm saying this, some of you may be tempted to be like, feeling? Nah, I don't think, this guy's a counselor. I mean, those counselors think they need to do that stuff. I'm saying, you want to think about yourself the way God thinks about you? He thinks about you the whole thing. And what you feel, even if you think it's not worth looking at, it's impacting your spouse, even though you don't know it. And not being aware of it gives it more power, actually. So when my partner reacts this way, I often feel. When I feel this way, I see myself as. When I feel this way, I long for or need. When I react the way I do, I guess that my partner feels. Describe your repeating negative cycle. Include how you and your partner trigger each other's feelings, thoughts, and behaviors. Okay. Those are hard questions. If you turn the page over, I think these can be helpful. Chuck all the statements that reflect the way you feel or what you do when you and your partner are fighting or not getting along. What I do, I attack, avoid conflict, come cold and aloof, blame, clam up, you see the list. What I feel, abandoned, afraid, alone, analyzed, angry. So those words can help you think about, so what do I feel in those times? In my body, I feel my heart speeding up. I feel pressure in my chest. I feel tense somewhere in my body. I feel tightness. See, this person, it's not Sue Johnson, but somebody working with her, actually, just did what the Bible does that we don't do very well in our theology, and that is we made the soul embodied, the whole thing. By asking questions about what you feel in your body, you're getting at. It can be a help for those of us who have a hard time figuring out what do we feel. Because you feel it in your body, actually. Very early in my social work career, I made a mistake. It almost cost me my job. But I had a supervisor who, I actually feel enough shame about it that I'm not telling you what the mistake was. Still, all these years later. My supervisor went to bat for me. And must have been some promises in terms of working with me and all of that, and practically became my counselor, but within the supervisory role. And she ended up just identifying my lack of assertiveness. And she just threw a series of questions, was asking me, it's like you're in a situation, someone's asking something from you, and you're, how do you feel that pressure or whatever it is? Where do you feel it was the first question. I go, right there. What does it feel like? For me, it's this pressure. I think she asked, so what are some situations, recently? And my wife and I had, we're looking for a refrigerator. It was appliance salesman. Any appliance salesman in here? There's going to be multiple closes. like, well, I don't know. I'm going to think about it. Well, hey, you can have it for 30 days and send, you know, for free, send it back and all that. You know, and there's more pressure. And my supervisor helped me by helping me recognize that, could turn it into a trigger for a better answer rather than, because what I would do is I start feeling, I just want to get out of it. I just want it to be over. So I'd say, okay, we'll take it because I want the pressure to be over. But I wasn't thinking about it. She helped me think consciously about it. So it's like now, it didn't take too long, you can't sell me anything. I mean, because it's automatic. When I'm feeling that, no. Yes, but no. I mean, I might want the thing, and I won't let myself say anything but no. Because a few times I've made the exception, I've always regretted it. It's not a good way to make the decision. But I've used too many words. Don't miss the point. By paying attention to where we feel, and where in our body where we feel, it can open doors to our understanding, to our mind of getting what is it that we're actually feeling. That makes sense? And then our first goal then is de-escalating the disconnection. And I'll let you read that yourself. And I'm going to slow down. I'm trying to do too much. And
it's getting late.
And I'm wondering what's been stirred in your mind. Do you know that in the Bible, the word mind and the word heart are used interchangeably? In Romans, when it says, Romans 12, when it says, be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that Paul's using that same way that he always does. It's representative more than thinking. That they recognize that thinking and feeling work together. That's mind. Questions? Thoughts? Sue Johnson says that in every relationship and in all of those situations, we're really asking the same question. and she asked that question in different ways, but it's really the same question. How much do I count? You know, or are you paying attention? Do I matter? And you start thinking about that, it changes everything, like everything. It's kind of scary, actually. But part of what happens is you kind of figure out that you're married to a person. And it's amazing. A person is amazing. And that, like the gospel, it's not about earning connection or earning goodness in the relationship by doing right behaviors. It's a whole different thing. And it's not about the behaviors at all. And for us in our culture, where we feel best when things are clear. And if things aren't clear, we get more information. But in a relationship, that actually doesn't work very well. It's something of what we're up to when we get in our arguments and we're trying to say to the other one, oh, this is how you messed up. We're just trying to be clear. We're trying to help them understand what they did. And it often has a piece of, you know, because this is how it impacted me. The problem is we don't see how life's more complicated and it really is a dance. It's a system. You know, they did that because you did something, and you did it because they did something, and they did that because they anticipated you were going to do something. I mean, it's much more complicated than that. It's more chaos theory than anything. But there's something about there's so much more available in our relationships rather than we even have a clue. But it is exactly, Brian, right? You know, what you're talking about, Brian, it's just like, whoa, there's that stuff underneath that's so significant and it's so easy to miss. I'm anxious, won't do it now, it's late. I'm anxious to tell you the story about Scott and Missy. Do we have any horse people here? Horse people? Does that mean you have horse? A horse? You did. So do you know what I'm talking about when I talk about natural horsemanship or the Pirelli method? Yeah, you know. Okay. Not the same guy. Yeah, but you're right. But the reason I asked that, my Scott and Missy story, Scott is an executive at Boeing, actually, at the St. Louis thing, who put himself in an apprenticeship under a different Scott in the St. Louis area who's into this natural horsemanship stuff. And Missy is our horse. You might have thought it was, you know, husband and wife, but I was trying to make it sound like that. Missy is our horse. We have two now because they're herd animals. I knew that. We knew that. But we didn't know what that means. They're herd animals because they're the prey for predators. So they stick in herds. That's what they say. And Missy had a really hard life. She was born on place where they bred racehorses, and she was there for 2 years. They never decided to not race her for some reason. We don't know what. We don't think it's because she's slow, because she looks awful fast to us. She has clicks in her joint, that might be it. And then was sold at auction, was on a different track in Illinois, and they gave up with her real quick, and she was on a kill list. They didn't have to kill her. And there's a rescue in Illinois that got a hold of her, and she was in this rescue for 5 years. The rescue are wonderfully, you know, good-hearted people, but they have way too many horses on way too little land, and Missy was nearly starving for 5 years. It's a really tough existence. But she was in a herd. And a friend of ours went over, has a relationship with people at the rescue, and went over and took Missy home just to fatten her up and get a chance that maybe she'd get adopted, and that's how we ended up with her. And we brought Missy home, and it took about a day and a half, and kind of had a mental breakdown. She just walking around in a big, great big circle repetitively. You know, overnight, wore a path. All the grass was gone. And she's alone. She's scared. She's anxious. She's sitting duck for any you know, prey. Any predator, I mean. And so we got a second horse. So anyway, a connection through a connection to this Scott, who came out to our house last Saturday and did some work with Missy. Assessing her, basically. He's coming again this weekend, and he's going to come for a while. I'll talk about more in the morning, but for now, I think, you know, what I want to explain, and I'll give more examples, is how I'm still thinking about this. Part of the reason I asked is that I don't know anything about it. I just saw this guy work with a horse for an hour. And it was mind-blowing. I was just kind of like, and my wife would ask questions. Did he say this? And I'm like, I have no idea. I mean, really. And it took me hours, and I went for drives, and I got snacks, and I kept thinking, and it's like, whoa, what just happened? I mean, imagine this. So he had worked with her about her moving her rear legs and releasing, which is stepping inside this way. He'd worked with her. She's on a rope, and he's pointing at her hip, actually, not touching her. He's creating pressure, benevolent pressure, creating pressure. So at the end of he'd taken the rope all up, and Missy had gone off and got some water to drink, and then she'd turn around, and she's kind of looking at him, some not looking at him. And she's about 25 feet away. So he stands, look at me. And she does. And he points from 25 feet away. And she moves her feet. It's Jedi horsemanship. You know? I mean, that's bizarre. He did it over and over. What? Doesn't make any sense. Except for this. He worked on three different behaviors that were important, and he was training her. But the point wasn't the behaviors. His goal was to develop a relationship with Missy that Missy trusted him. It's just like our moment earlier. He put pressure on her in certain ways, like moving toward her, moving into her space, touching her. She doesn't like to get touched. Different things that he did. But he would maintain it in such a way until she relaxed, and when she relaxed, he backed off. Why was he doing that? Her instinctive sense when pressure is fight or flight. So you put pressure on, she's going to tend to put pressure back, which is what she's been doing. She's been acting out, and well, that's partly why he can't, because she's very unpredictable. And taking that, working with the natural response and maintaining pressure, but not with this idea of we're going to make you submit so you behave right. You ever feel like that in one of your arguments, that one of you is trying to get the other one to submit so they'll behave right? But rather, sort of the pressure on relationally, so that when Missy's, what he's drawing for is, do you want to try to do what I'm asking? And he kept saying, oh, she's got a lot of try in her. And he wasn't focused on the behavior. He was focused on how is she relating to him. To which at the end, he said, what I want is that when I'm riding her or you're riding her, come along and there's something that spooks her, that she looks at me. Because I'm the better horse. She's trusting me. We're in a relationship where she trusts me as leader. At the very end of the day, my wife and I are standing about this far. Missy's walking over, sort of shooting for right in between, and Scott's always focused on the animal. And but conversation with us, and he's like, "Yeah, she's trying to decide right now who to go to, the leader, or her food source." It was fascinating, and she went to him. She feels really safe. Why she feels more safe with him than us is he's so consistent in demonstrating he's caring for her. He's out for what is best. We don't know what we're doing. We give her mixed signals all the time. Some of the frustration that we've seen is because she's asking us, what do you want me to do? And we don't tell her. We don't know how to show her or what to do with that. And so we get into situations that are a lot like the married couples get into. You know, it's kind of yelling at each other. It isn't productive at all. Where both parties basically want to know and want to experience that you're in this relationship for me. And that's the missing piece that stays missing when we fall into the negative pattern. Father, open our hearts and minds and help us to get refocused on taking care of each other. And I pray, Father, that you'd just take lots of stuff spinning, it seems to me, in the air to take something for each one and each couple and sort of land it where it needs to land. And we thank you that you can do that. Help us wrestle with things we need to wrestle with. Help us work it better, work at what better would look like. Help us to get curious again, more curious than we've been. Whatever it might be, Father, just help us and help us to enjoy the rest of the night and our time tomorrow.